Welcome to Resiliency Redefined. I'm your host, Robin, and I am thrilled to share with you information about resiliency, well-being, performance, education, business, parenting, and everything in between. I'm committed to joining you each week to talk about these big ideas and bring them into action, habits, tools, strategies, tactics that allow us to finally uncover what it takes to truly be well. And I'm just so excited that you're here. Hello, everyone. Welcome back to Resiliency Redefined. I'm so excited for this conversation today because this very much is the conversation that I wish I could have heard, I don't know, 20 years ago. So today we're going to dive into the topic around New Year's resolutions. And this to me is such an important conversation to have because this is one of those situations where like, I want to like provide you with the matches to like burn the bridge between this notion of new year, new you. Now, I am somebody who absolutely loves to have goals. I really operate in a system of having a target, knowing what I'm working towards. If I don't really have clarity of what I'm working towards, I do tend to get myself off the rails. I tend to feel a bit rudderless, and I do so much better with a plan. Like, I wish I could articulate in like the right words how much I love a plan. Even to the point where like there's sometimes when I notice I'm feeling a wee bit dysregulated, a little bit wobbly. And as soon as I'm able to map out a little bit of a plan, whether it be on a Saturday, if I don't have a lots of things already structured, or even if it's just like going into a holiday, whatever it is, I thrive with some structure. And I love to like not be part of structure at the same time. This is what we call a dual truth. It's like part of me loves a plan. If not, I find my thinking, my feelings gets really scattered. It really kind of goes in all different directions at the same time. If I do have a plan, I like having a plan in the sense that it keeps me feeling like on track. However, I don't like to have a plan because time blindness is one of the areas that I struggle with my ADHD. So being forced to have time zones or time plans, I don't love what that feels like. And I also know I do better when I have a plan. So thankfully, hopefully you're still listening, you're following with me. I have this tugging relationship, or what our friend Tim Arnold would say is this tension between having a plan and having freedom. Something that I know what will win out on the end of the day or at the end of the day will absolutely be having a plan. Okay, so New Year resolution, I think, is this like amazing time where we get to make plans. However, what I get really concerned about is the reality that research suggests between 80 and 90% of New Year's resolutions never get off the ground. They aren't able to actually like shift into habits, routines, rituals, which then essentially, if we look at those numbers, we are setting ourselves up for failure. If we know 80 to 90% of people who set intentions at New Year's Eve aren't able to have them even a month later, this is a little bit of a friction. So yes, I like to have a plan. New Year seems like a good time to have plans. However, the data doesn't back it up, it being a wise practice. Okay, so what can we do differently? What can we imagine or redefine when it comes to setting well-being and wellness goals? Now, the first invitation I would love to share with you is to recognize that if you know what, New Year's resolutions work for you, if you're some of those chosen people that, yeah, January is a fresh start, new me, it works, great. I celebrate you. That's amazing. Keep it up, Tiger. The rest of us who now that doesn't work so well, it's okay. We're going to look at a different way to imagine it together today. So again, if that works for you, you love those goals, great. I like to buy journals, for example. I don't ever really fill them in. So if you like to set goals and you know you're not going to achieve them, but you still like the practice, go for it. There's zero judgment. Again, as I said, I love to buy journals. I've never really figured out journaling, but I just like to do it. So maybe that's the same for you, and that's totally okay. Now, for some of us who find that New Year's resolutions, we don't really enjoy it, and we're not really able to follow through with it, no big deal. Let's look at it in a different way. First of all, instead of imagining what we should be doing or ought to be doing, my invitation for you is to frame this new fresh start. Because let's face it, January is a fresh start. You have this big, bold, bright future ahead of you, and it doesn't have any mistakes in it yet, as Anne Shirley, Anne with an E, would like to say from Anne of Green Gables. She had this amazing line where she said, "I love tomorrow because they don't have any mistakes in it yet." I love that. Okay, I'm back on track. What I want you to think about, instead of what you should do or ought to do in this season of new beginnings, my big idea is, how do you want to feel? How do you want to feel in 2025? Do you want to feel grounded? Do you want to feel sturdy? Do you want to feel productive? Do you want to feel more energetic, maybe more connected? Do you want to feel more secure? Do you want to feel more excited, more alive, more vibrant? Whatever it is that you want to feel more of in 2025, what I want you to do is get radical clarity on what the feeling is that you want to feel. And then what I'm going to encourage you to do is, let's figure out, what are your best behaviors that you can invite into your day that's going to make that possible? What can you invite into your day that is going to make it possible? So we're not going to do a whole New Year's resolution. We're going to just do a day resolution. We are going to find a way, find the resolve to add a new behavior that is most likely going to give you the feeling that you want to feel more of. So that's what I think will make a radical difference in people's lives when we think about adding something that's going to set us up for success, instead of many of those traditional approaches to resolutions, which means change because there's something wrong with you, right? How many of them are about like weight loss, or about even things like worrying, or about like financial things, or things that make us feel like we're not doing a good enough job? Now, my friends, we are always in the practice of evolution, and we want to be moving that needle forward. We want to be in that place of growth. But I do think it's so important that we just hold space to recognize when we're always in this state of personal and professional practice or improvement, there's this kind of tendency to think that we're not good enough, or we're not enough as we are. So yes, we want to be evolving and recognizing we're doing really well. We are doing so well with the tools, the energy, the strategies, the tactics, and even the motivation for where we are right now. And even those maladaptive behaviors that maybe you picked up along the way, those serve a purpose. And shaming ourselves into well-being, shaming ourselves into better, isn't going to work. It's the same idea that we can't hate ourselves healthy. We aren't able to like punish ourselves into well-being. We want to reimagine reconnecting with ourselves in a way that helps us truly feel better. So that big idea, what is the feeling that you want to feel more of in 2025? Now let's play around with some examples. Let's just popcorn around some examples. Things that I've heard people share with me in the last few weeks around, Robin, this is what I want to feel more of, is connection. They want to feel closer to their loved ones. I love this as a daily goal moving into this fresh, new, big, bright season. You want to feel more connection. So the question I would ask is, where do you already feel connection? What are those relationships or those patterns that are already serving you and are meeting that need? Because our success in any area leaves clues. So before we start thinking we need this major overhaul, let's just pause and recognize, okay, well, I do this in some places, probably do it fairly well in some places. What's working? So maybe it could be having a pattern. And what I mean by that is you make the decision that every day you are going to send two text messages to people in your community to just let them know that you are thinking about them, right? And maybe you might want to even start by saying, you don't have to respond to this, but I just want you to know that you're on my heart today and I'm sending you all the good thoughts and energy. What's so fascinating about that practice of like absolving people from the responsibility of replying, more often than not, they are going to reply. But just this idea of every morning, send two solid like bullets of good into the world of the people that matter most to you. Okay, that could be a practice that fosters connection. Maybe another one could be that once a week, no matter what, becomes a non-negotiable that you are going to spend 15 minutes having a real conversation with someone. Like, I mean, like real, whether it be on the phone, like ear to ear, let's get into it. Or maybe it's having that coffee. But I encourage you to set the practice of just having like a 15-minute moment of connection. Now, the reason I'm suggesting that is this, is because what we know to be true is that if I say, okay, I have to set up an hour a week to make big connection, it's going to be really hard to do. There's always going to be things that get in the way. But if we just start small, 15 minutes of connection, it's going to be more likely you're going to be able to do that. So scheduling those phone calls, right? Scheduling that phone call, 15 minutes of a check-in, maybe a quick coffee. Now, the reality is once you're in the behavior, once you're in that practice, it will probably last longer than 15 minutes, but at least it's a starting point. And this is this idea of just get started. Okay, so those were two quick little top of mind examples. Every day, connect with two people, just a text message to say, I'm thinking about you. And one little 15-minute micro moment a week to connect with somebody that you want to strengthen or maybe just revisit some of those connection points. So that's a starting point. Now, you might notice that that doesn't perhaps meet this like old mother wound of needing acceptance and connection and security. But maybe what you really want is that, right? Like really deep, big, meaningful healing, restoration of relationships. Now you might say, Robin, sending two text messages and having one chat once a week, it's not going to like fill this massive void or this area in my life that I have to radically improve. You're right. It won't, but it's not going to make it worse. And it's not going to take away that as the bigger arching feeling of goal that you're working towards. It is a start. It is a beginning. And when we think about behavioral change, we have to start. So this is where the second idea comes in. Before you start to try and improve a habit or make the habit better or more meaningful or more productive, just start. So what happens so often, even when we think about like our well-being in terms of our physical health, people will be like, okay, so, you know, I have to make this really complicated plan of getting more movement into my day, whatever that might look like. My invitation for you there is no, just start like half an hour a day. If that's too much, 15 minutes a day. Don't worry about trying to like perfect the behavior or master the behavior. You have to have the habit first before then you improve it. So my friends, this isn't like a tune-up. This is literally just start getting this into your arsenal of behaviors, habits, and routines that you have. So I hope you're hearing the invitation to just start somewhere. Okay, so let's take that physical health piece. That's another goodie. I appreciate that there is enormous pressure on people to be in this like realm of physical excellence. Okay, like this idea that we're always chasing, striving, whether it be like external perfection in terms of what we look like or just like optimal in terms of how we feel. The reality is that the way that we're structuring this kind of belief, it's very elusive to many of us, most of us, because it's designed that way. We're not designed to all look a particular way yet. there is enormous amounts of pressure in society to suggest that this like 1% is what we all are supposed to look like or what we're all supposed to be like or feel like. My friends, again, this is faulty logic. This is, when you think of diet culture, it is a billion-dollar business for a reason, because it is creating a problem and then it's profiting off a problem. Now, I have very strong feelings about this, to the point that in Stress Wisely, the whole chapter on physical well-being, I really went after diet culture, because I know from my own lived experience, diet culture dramatically impacted and significantly impacted my emotional and my mental health. As somebody who navigated an eating disorder, as somebody who has navigated their body in so many different seasons and just really struggled with self-acceptance and working with what I was given, I feel as though diet culture was responsible for not only kind of fracturing my sense of well-being, but also like growing up with, with a parent that was dieting, with, you know, even just this notion of what was happening all around me with diet culture. It's something that has made this like very difficult part of my life even more difficult than it needed to be. Now, where I got enormous amounts of clarity was actually through, it was this one particular book, and I'll put it in the show notes, but essentially it was a bit of a, like a snapshot historically of diet culture. And what it did is it explained where a lot of this came from. Okay, where did a lot of this come from? First of all, even just the notion of a calorie. The notion of a calorie, it is such a fractured measurement. It was designed by essentially like setting fire to food to see how long it would take to burn. And like, that's how they like generated this concept of a calorie. So if you're ever wondering like, why the heck do avocados have so many calories? It's because it took a long time for it to burn in a petri dish. But what it doesn't tell you is the fact that like avocados are like this superfood that will help us heal on like a cellular level. Yet I know people who will like choose the donut because it has 10 calories versus this super, you know, costly calorie avocado because it has so many calories. But my friends, low calorie equals low energy. Low calorie is low energy. So again, just even this notion of calories, it's so fractured. To add insult to injury, let's even bring in that notion of like, you know, how many calories we're supposed to have on any given day. Now, I remember coming upon this finding, and again, I wrote about it in Stress Wisely. It came out of the book Diet Culture, where it said that, are you ready for this? Oh my goodness, brace yourselves. It is taught, even today, that women are supposed to have around 1,800 calories, okay? That we're supposed to have 1,800 calories. Where did that come from? Who said women specifically need 1,800 calories? Well, apparently, after the Second World War, and there was all of a sudden this massive increase of women in industry, right? So, you know, women were holding these roles that they never had before. And the suffragette movement was getting so strong. And like things were on the up and up for women's rights. And then apparently there was this like group of people who got together and were like, whoa, these women, they're like wilding out. They are getting strong. They want rights. They want property. They want jobs outside of the home. Like, what are we going to do with this massive collective movement of women getting all fired up? And this group came to this conclusion that if we restricted how many calories a day that women were to have, it would, are you ready for this? Slow them down. It's hard to protest if you're hungry. If you're worried about your body and you're in this place of not having enough energy, you won't be able to build a revolution. You won't be able to like fight the patriarchy. So they were literally underfeeding women as a strategy to slow down women's evolution. Now, I hope that you're just like, this, heck no, this is wrong on every level, Robin. Like, tell me this isn't still practiced today. Sorry, but it is. Today in medical school, women are still, it's still suggested that they need 1800 calories, and it has nothing to do with physiology or biology. It was a mechanism of oppression. So, sisters in arms, if you have ever rebelled on a diet, if you've ever like tried to restrict your calories and then finally you're just like, F this, and you like grab those delicious, yummy things that actually make you feel good and get that dopamine flowing and that serotonin and all the good happy hormones going when you eat the things that you want to eat. And you're just like, no, this is, forget this, right? I can't survive on this low calorie diet. You are part of the resistance. I celebrate you in every way because you listen to your intuition that said, this doesn't feel right. This doesn't feel good. Now, what I think happens is that we know, like intuitively, something is wrong with this and we fight back, but then we get inundated with all these messagings, right? All of this before and after porn, like, oh my goodness, in January, it's gonna be rampant. My friends, this is just when you just block it out, okay? I believe we can shift diet culture. Absolutely. And the daily fight is simply blocking it, right? If you see before and after picture, just block. Like you don't even need that on your radar because I want you to get to a place where you are able to trust your intuition when it comes to your eating behavior. So the most amazing resource I've ever come across, if you have to like heal your relationship with eating and food and undereating and overeating and all the things, it is around the intuitive practice. And again, I can put Evelyn's information in the show notes as well. This is the book that was the only book that taught me how to eat for my well-being moving forward. So yeah, I navigated those waters of an eating disorder. I had lots of behavioral approaches to that, cognitive behavioral support, which was helpful, but it was the work of Evelyn Tremblay that really brought me to a place where I was able to learn and unlearn a lot of it. So for anyone who is wanting to be part of this resistance and continue to be part of this rebellion for the physical piece around nutrition, I would definitely encourage you to check out a resource that's going to set you up for success. Okay, I'm mindful of our time. I want to give you like one more little idea. So we talked a little bit about connection. We've talked a little bit about, you know, that physical around like nutrition and how we're just going to not subscribe to the new you, new me thing. Because my friends, you are A-okay as you are. Everything you've done to this point has been serving you. Maybe some things have been adaptive. Some might be maladaptive. Don't worry. We don't need to overhaul our life. The last little invitation, though, I really want to invite you to think about is getting so specific on improving your sleep behavior. Okay. If you want to start with these micro behaviors, I encourage you as we walk into this new season to make January about getting good rest. Okay. Super quick. There's two types of naps that I want to invite you to think about to help you set yourself up for January and rest and sleep and restoration. Now, to be able to understand the value of these naps, it's helpful to recognize that a sleep cycle is about 90 minutes. Okay, so that sleep cycle, your brain and your body will go through these sleep cycles. Usually we try to get, you know, 4 or 5 in a nighttime, and that would be considered good sleep. Now, I love that people talk about REM sleep and you know, that kind of idea of that deep sleep, which is important, but you might notice like REM sleep, like it only makes up about 20% of your sleep behavior. The other cycle part of it I want to share with you is often called N3 sleep. Now, why this is so important is because this is when your brain decides me time and it wants to look after itself. It wants to get rid of all of the toxins, all the adenosine, all the built up plaque that is a result of cognitive functioning and even just basic physiological functioning, like breathing, thinking, all the things. So during N3 sleep, your body washes out all that adenosine. It takes care of itself. And what happens is that if we, for example, wake up in the middle of that cycle, you're going to feel groggy. You're going to feel gross because like half of it got washed out, but then it lingers and we just don't feel super good. Okay. All that to say, here are the two nap behaviors that I want you to think about. Number one is just a 20-minute nap. call it a power nap, just a quick little power nap, which ensures that you will not activate or move into N3 sleep. Okay, so this is just set that timer, 20 minutes, close your eyes. You won't sleep for the full 20 minutes. You probably only fall asleep for the last 3 or 4, but that's okay. And the research shows that little nap behavior is going to give you hours more of energy and focus. Okay, so just use a little power nap. And as my very dear friend, Dr. Greg, likes to call it, a nappuccino, if you need to biohack it, which is have a cup of coffee, then close your eyes for 20 minutes, and you will have extra energy, not an everyday practice, but in clutch, it's good to have that practice. It's called a nappuccino. Okay, so that's nap number one. So let's make sure that we're getting a few more little power naps in our week. Now, this is the second nap, and this is the one that, let's say your heart is tired. Let's say your emotions are tired. I want you to have one extra 90-minute nap a week. Because what that does is it gives you one bonus sleep cycle. Okay, so set that alarm 90 minutes. You'll get one of those good washing cycles to do some of that brain repair. You're just gonna get a bonus of not only more energy, but also what the research shows is higher scores of compassion, ability to communicate, and empathy. So people who add just one bonus 90-minute nap into their week, the research shows it will make a remarkable improvement. Now, here's the last takeaway, and I'm mindful we're a little extra on time, but my friends, this is a bit of a bonus episode as it is. Let's say, now that we know a sleep cycle is 90 minutes, okay? This is gonna be my only, like, are you kidding me, Robin, moment for today. And you wake up by yourself naturally without an alarm, and you look over and let's say you have an hour before your alarm goes off. Okay, so let's say my alarm is set for 6 a.m. and all of a sudden I wake up naturally at 5 a.m. and I look over and I see that 6 a.m. alarm hasn't come yet. This is gonna be the bit of bad news. I want you to just get out of bed. Now you might be saying, oh, Robin, I need that extra 60 minutes. I feel you, and the chances are you're gonna be in the middle of a sleep cycle, which means when you wake up 60 minutes later, when that alarm goes off, you're going to feel groggy, you're going to feel gross, and you will be fighting that tired exhaustion all day long. So if you wake up naturally before your alarm within that 90-minute window, my invitation for you is just to get up. You're totally able to use a little power nap later in the day, but this will make a remarkable improvement on the quality of your days when you are with your biology versus fighting against your biology. So a 90-minute nap if you need emotional rest, a 20-minute nap for energy, and if you wake up within 90 minutes of your alarm, just get up and take good care of you. My last little nappy idea here, my last one, I promise. If you've heard this notion about like 5 a.m. club, 4 a.m. club, like, you know, successful people wake up at like 4 a.m. What we often don't hear about the winners at 4 a.m. is that they go to bed at 8 p.m. We want to ensure that we are getting 7 or 8 hours of good rest. So what I see when that whole like 4 a.m. champs wake up, why it's so fractured of an idea, is because folks stay up till midnight and they get up at 4 because they think that's when winners get up. Well, no, winning means getting 8 hours of good rest. It will give you the best return on your investment when it comes to your health going into 2025. So I hope this has been useful. I hope this has been helpful. And I also just want to thank you. Thank you for tuning in. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of this collective movement that says at this place of new beginnings, we're going to do it in a radically compassionate and research sound way. So, as you go into 2025, I am sending you so much encouragement. I'm rooting for you. I know it's going to be a great year because it's exactly where you're meant to be. It doesn't have to be the best this year. It has to be the best year for yourself. So please hear this. This is my last little note. I don't want you to think about best self this year. Don't think about your best self this year. I want you to think, what is best for myself this year? What is best for myself this year? Because yourself, my friends, is pretty fantastic already. So Take good care, and I'll see you next time. Bye for now. Thank you for spending time with this podcast episode today. I hope you found something helpful in Resiliency Redefined. Please feel free to share it with somebody who you might think could benefit. Maybe there was something useful, something in particular that you think you could pay forward. Also, if you have a moment, please feel free to rate and review this podcast wherever you like to listen to your podcasts. It means the world to me. And again, thanks for your time. Thank you for your interest. Take good care, and I'll see you next time.